Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We've all heard about the Lost Boys of Sudan, that group of about 20,000 boys who fled violence in Sudan in the 1980s and 90s. Their families had either been killed or driven away, so these boys banded together and traveled across East Africa with no food, no water, and no way to defend themselves. Those who survived eventually walked 1,000 miles until they reached a refugee camp in Kenya. They lived in their own section of the camp and continued to watch out for each other while they waited years for a chance to resettle in another country. This Sunday, 60 Minutes will air an in-depth special looking at the 3,500 Lost Boys who came to the U.S. But the story of the Lost Boys raises a rarely asked question. What about the girls? What happened to all the young girls who were caught in the violence in Sudan? Sasha Chanoff is the founder and executive director of Refuge Point. And Sasha, you're featured in the 60 Minutes special, and you've spent a lot of time in the camps where the Sudanese fled. Were there a lot of girls there?
Absolutely. During the resettlement of the Lost Boys, there were at least many hundreds of girls who were in the camp who shared the exact same story as the boys. They had fled. They had been separated from their families. They were orphaned as well. But unlike the boys, culturally, it wasn't acceptable for them to live on their own. So they were placed with foster families or in foster care situations. The girls became hidden in those situations, and they were not known by the international community. They weren't recognized as orphans. And so they were largely overlooked, even though they had the same story and had experienced the same persecution.
And by being overlooked, they lost out on opportunities to potentially come to the U.S.?
Absolutely. The lists that were used to generate the resettlement roster were taken from organizations that had programs for unaccompanied children. But girls rarely had an opportunity to sign up for those programs because if you are an orphaned girl in Kakuma camp, you are often kept at home in servitude situations. And when you hit the age of 12 or 13, those who are caring for you start thinking about marrying you off for a bride price.
So even though you are in a home environment, it still may have been better for those girls to have had the chance to go to another country.
Oh, absolutely. And if you look at the 89 girls who did have an opportunity to come here, you see these extraordinary success stories. But tragically, many hundreds, if not more, were completely overlooked, were forced into servitude situations, and then were married off against their will and had no opportunities to make decisions about their own life.
One of the 89 girls you just referenced is also with us in the studio, although she's now a woman, obviously. And this is Yar Ayul. Yar, thank you also for coming in.
Thank you.
And Yar, you were driven from your home in South Sudan when you were 7 and eventually made your way to a camp in Kenya?
Yes.
What was that journey like?
That journey was tough. My situation was different from the rest of the boys because my dad was with me at the time. But then when he was killed, I became vulnerable and no protection. So I became one of those lost children, walk with many lost boys across East Africa.
Your dad was killed somewhere along the way?
Yeah, on our way back from Ethiopia. And he died in the border of Sudan and Ethiopia. And then from there, I had to walk with my younger brother, cared for him at age 7. He was about 4.
So you became the parent of the family, even though you were still a little girl?
Yes.
And the two of you together, you and your brother, ended up in a refugee camp?
Yes, and we made it together to the U.S.
How long were you in the camp before you eventually made it to the United States?
8 years, 1992 to 2000.
8 years, so from age 7 to age 15?
Mm-hmm.
And then what was the process of you being able to go to the U.S.?
One time I saw a group of boys standing by this bulletin posting, and I got curious and went there, and I said, what's going on? And they said, well, something sounds like going to America. I said, fill me in. So then they gave me a form, and I filled it out. And forgot about it, and then didn't have a second thought, this is going to happen to come to the U.S. So then few months later, I was called to give my life story. And then I was approved. This excitement came to me, and I couldn't believe that this is really happening to me.
So you had submitted a form, an application that you basically forgot about, and suddenly a letter arrives that changes your life.
Yeah.
What do you do now in the United States?
I am a mom of two. Graduated from college 2 years ago, and I'm doing my graduate studies and work with a nonprofit organization in Boston.
If you hadn't come to the U.S., what do you think your life would have been like?
My life would be hopeless. I would be desperate, married. Of course.
Desperate and married?
And married with a lot of children, probably the man that my family chose or relatives. So pretty much arranged marriage.
And Sasha, what Yara is describing, is that something you have seen many times?
It is so common that it's just reprehensible. Sudanese girls, particularly if they're orphaned or separated from their families, are forced into marriage at a very young age. In fact, in Kakuma refugee camp, when names of girls were posted on the resettlement lists, some girls started disappearing because they were kidnapped. In situations of forced displacement and conflict and refugee crisis, often cultural norms are turned on their head, and there might be mechanisms to protect girls, cultural norms that protect them, but these don't exist. What matters is survival. Girls become commodities. They are looked at as someone who can bring money to a family in need. So particularly if they don't have protectors or parents, they're often sold off against their will. In Kakuma camp, I heard of a number of girls who took their own lives rather than face this sort of desperate and hopeless situation.
That's Sasha Chenoff of Refuge Point, a refugee organization. He's worked with many of the lost boys of Sudan at a refuge camp in Kenya. We're also speaking with Yar Ayul, a lost girl of Sudan. She's now about 28. She doesn't know her exact birthday. As we've heard, she's settled in the U.S., is the mother of two kids, and she's a grad student. The Lost Boys of Sudan will be featured this weekend on 60 Minutes, but we're talking about the lost girls who found themselves on the run from civil war in Sudan and other countries. We'll have more with both of them in about a minute. You're listening to Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with Sasha Chenoff and Yar Ayul. Sasha is the director of Refuge Point, an organization that helps refugees. And Yar is originally from Sudan, but had to flee from there when she was just 7 years old. She lived in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya for 7 years before relocating to the United States. And when we left off, Sasha, you were telling us that sometimes when girls' names showed up on the resettlement lists in the Kakuma camp, those girls were then kidnapped by their families, maybe distant relatives who wanted to trade them into arranged marriages in exchange for money or cattle or other things of value. Yar, did you see this sort of thing when you were in the camp?
Yes, I did see some of the things that Sasha said. I know some girls who applied or fill out the forms like I did, and people will come up with stories that will make them change their mind or kidnap or threaten. So when they are called, they wouldn't show up for interview, and they would assume that they don't want to. They are interested.
But actually, they've been kidnapped because their families want to keep them for domestic labor, essentially? Is that what's happening?
Culturally, being the girl is seen as someone who can bring wealth. If you have a girl married and have a lot of money or cattle, then it wouldn't be worth risking her going to come to the United States.
A girl can bring a lot of wealth because you can literally sell or trade her for something else?
Yeah, it's called the dowry or bride price.
And Sasha Chenoff, would you say that that is specific to these camps in Kenya and among Sudanese refugees, or is this more broadly a situation at refugee camps around the world?
This is commonplace in situations of forced displacement, war, conflict, and refugee crises. Girls are often completely overlooked and denied any rights. I've heard it said that the great moral challenge of the 19th century was slavery. The great moral challenge of the 20th century was totalitarianism. And the great moral challenge of our time is the oppression of girls and women. In situations of war and conflict, refugee girls are often the most at risk. They are sold off into marriage. They are often subject to rape and terrible violence. They have no rights, they're scared, and they have nowhere to turn for help. Today, right now, Syria just topped the million mark in terms of refugees who fled from Syria. We are reading in articles today about girls who are being sold to much older men.
Syrian girls.
Syrian girls who are being sold for a bride price. In Congo, Congo is one of the great humanitarian catastrophes of our time. Nearly 6 million people, or perhaps more, have lost their lives in the conflict there that started in 1996. More than 500,000 refugees have fled the Congo, and many millions are displaced within the Congo. Girls who flee in those situations are put at great risk of sexual violence. Refugees International, a wonderful advocacy organization, just highlighted the violence against girls in refugee camps. You see this across Africa, and our staff who work across Africa with Refuge Point see this everywhere.
Yar, many years ago, you were one of those displaced girls. What do you think when you hear this?
I was not shocked, because I know these things happen every day. When I was at the refugees camp in Kakuma, I was very determined to get my education, so I walked. They have the lights, lamp light, where people study at night. I get busy in the afternoon and morning, and then one time I walk there to go and study at night with a group of guys. One time I almost came close to being attacked, walking alone at night. You're just a girl. The situation generally for refugees, girls, young women, is there's less protection. And also being oppressed. If you are trying to go get education, there are always hurdles on your way. Like being attacked when you walk alone at night, or some worse could happen to you.
Sasha and Yar, maybe you both know the answer to this, but are there refugee girls who aren't taken in by people who want to turn them into child brides or domestic labor, but who also don't end up in refugee camps? Is there some in-between point for some of these girls?
One of the great new situations that we're confronting as a global society is urbanization. A decade ago, most refugees ended up in refugee camps. Today, half of the world's refugees are fleeing to cities. And in those situations, there are often no humanitarian systems set up to protect girls. Our organization, Refuge Point, has done research in Nairobi and found that the first 72 hours after arrival are the most dangerous for unaccompanied girls. That's when they can be trafficked, they can be taken into servitude situations and exploited, and they find themselves confronting a range of terrible dangers.
So they can become sort of anonymous and vulnerable in an urban area.
They are anonymous. They're vulnerable. They don't know where to go for help. And it is the newest frontier of humanitarian situations.
You've said that the mistakes made and the lessons learned from the Lost Girls of Sudan have implications for humanitarian programming today. Those are your words, I believe. What do you think those implications are?
Those implications are that humanitarian agencies have to put girls front and center. They have to consider the particular vulnerabilities that girls face, because if they don't, girls are overlooked and they're forgotten. That's what happened with the Lost Girls of Sudan, and that's what's happening today in many situations as well.
Yar, when you remember back or try to remember back when you were in a refugee situation, what do you think you needed most if you had to advise the organizations that now want to help girls in a situation that you were once in?
Find those girls rather than listen to the community who said that, girls aren't lost. Girls don't have the needs as the boys does. Girls experience the same things that the young lost boys of the Sudan experience. And because the girls were with families, they were overlooked. So people should look hard and trying to find ways to find these girls.
Sasha Chanoff and Yar Ayul, thank you very much for both coming to the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Yar Ayul fled Sudan as a girl. She's now studying for an MBA and working at a nonprofit agency in Boston. And Sasha Chanoff is the founder and executive director of Refuge Point, a refugee aid organization based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. You can find more about that organization at hereandnow.org. The latest news is next, here and now.